is 6 o'clock on Wednesday, November 12th, and this is a regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting. In attendance are Sherm Howard, Alan Bice, Matt Julison, and Kyson Spindlove. And I never can keep straight who's first and who's second.
Alternate. I'll
might be one of my last chances.
And Council Member John Valente. Could I have a volunteer to give us an invocation and lead us in the pledge?
I'll go ahead and do it.
Thank you.
Our Heavenly Father, we're grateful for the opportunity we have to gather together tonight to be able to discuss the needs that we have here in Planning Commission to better our codes and standards and to be able to help us grow as a community. We're grateful for the freedoms that we have and for those veterans that have served us. And we're also very grateful for this beautiful community that we have. We ask thee to help us as we plan, that we can be able to do so in a way that would please thee and be able to help our community continue to grow in the right way. And again, we love thee and we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number B is approval of tonight's agenda.
That we approve tonight's agenda.
I'll second that.
Motion by Sherm, second by Matt. All in favor?
Aye.
Item number C, approval of the minutes of the October 22nd, 2025 meeting.
I'll go ahead and move that we approve the October 22nd, 2025 regular meeting minutes.
I'll second that.
Motion by Kyson, second by John. All in favor?
Aye.
Item number C is business. Discussion regarding updates to the zoning code. Derek, do you think it needs explanation or should we just launch into it?
Yeah.
Okay. Staff has streamlined and clarified some things in zoning code. So the first half of your packet is that. The second half, they're just removing things from the zone and adding them to the construction standards. So there's not really any changes at all there, but because it's dealing with the zone, it needs to come before us. So there are three codes for each of these: the existing code, the proposed changed, and then the clean copy with the proposed changes. I know it's been keeping all of us up at night, but they would like to add polypropylene to the materials that vaults can be made of, because all the cool towns are doing that now. So if you have discussion about any of these things, please speak up. Derek tells me that is now acceptable material for vaults.
It's a cheaper way for people to go rather than being in a vault. And like you said, all the other cities are doing it and allowing it. We can't allow it. The sexton can't sign off on different types, but it's better if we have it spelled out. In there, and then we added the whatever the industrial standard, you know, comes out for vaults and things like that. But just so you know, as we were changing this, we saw how deficient our cemetery code is. So we're actually going to bring back the whole entire code back, because last time it was updated in '82, and I'm still a junior in high school, so that tells you how long ago that was. But a lot of things need to change. We've got a lot of people. Just for example, I'm not going to go through all this on every single thing, but just so you know, it's like in the cemetery you have cremation's allowed, so people want to put a headstone at the front where the first person is and the headstone at the bottom, half where the other person is, but you can't get them over through an area where you have two headstones. So we want to have them do it, but they'll have to be flush mount with the ground so you can, you know, mow over them and stuff, so that can happen. Second markers, you like veterans, you see they'll have the main marker and then they'll have the veteran marker. Sometimes they want to get them taller and stuff, and then that coach, that you get beyond that one size of your base and the headstone, it becomes a maintenance issue. Planting flowers, live flowers and trees and stuff like that are too much to maintain. If you want to do something within the base of your headstone with live flowers, you can do that as long as you maintain them, but they go unmaintained, the staff has the ability to remove them because it becomes more of a maintenance. You know, the more stuff, life, that's very good. The more life stuff you have in the cemetery, the more things that there are to maintain, it becomes a bigger process. So we're going to associate a date with, suggest one that's prior to the date of passage, that everything that's there now will be able to be stayed there because that wasn't allowed to be a certain thing going forward. Because people are really pushing to put trees, bushes, and things like that in there. We're putting up, there's just a whole bunch of other things. Like if you have, like let's say Alan has the certificates and he dies and his wife wants him to give him somebody else or have somebody else be buried in the other parts of the cemetery that you have your certificates for, there's no allowance for that. Staff is kind of always pushed to have the person have the legal, what is the word of that, when you have the legal say over a family, power of attorney. Or they have to get all their siblings to sign off on that they're okay with it, because we've had people come in and say, hey, I'm the one in charge, and I can make these decisions, and we let them make them, and they end up getting your rear end handed to you. You know, because cemetery stuff's already quite an emotional thing. So we've got a thing in there now that gives you a precise way of going about and doing it, so that we're in the problem. So you'll bring it up today. Like I said, I'm not going to do this on hardly any of the other stuff, but just know as we start going down this road, there's more and more changes that need to be made because it affects other areas of the code. And I think this is just an evolution that we'll continue to go through as we grow. And then none of this you're passing, here's tonight and Tuesday, or tonight, Tuesday, tonight, we're only having one meeting, proposing one meeting this month, and proposing one meeting next month, unless something big comes up. We just want to discuss this, make changes, discuss it. We're really not going to hit it hard until January, but this is a good conversation to get moving forward.
Okay, thank you. Then a proposed change at the bottom of page one is that internal accessory dwelling units must be attached to the primary dwelling unit, which seems intuitive, but I'm familiar with a case in Hurricane where the guy just ran a 2-inch angle iron from his accessory dwelling unit to his house and called it attached now. And ended up getting away with it because they had no definition of what attached was. So the definition,
somewhere in here I have the actual definition.
Yeah, I had it too. They have to share a floor and a wall and a roof to be attached.
I think it's on page 3. Attached to primary building.
Yeah, middle of page 3, a shared wall, floor, roof, and often includes a door providing interior access. That just cleans that up and defines what an internal accessory dwelling unit is. Bottom of page 3. Detached accessory dwelling unit has to be outside of a primary dwelling or residence and having its own separate outside entrance and within the appropriate relevant setbacks established by law or ordinance, and not encumbering rights of way. So that just defines what a detached accessory dwelling unit is.
Can I?
Please.
Just I think we may have missed just on the very bottom of page 2, the accessory building or accessory structure. I guess I just want to clarify, this looks like a completely new definition.
Yeah.
I want to clarify, I was just thinking of some scenarios. In my mind, for this definition, accessory building would be more of just a could be a shop, a structure, an exterior garage. I've seen some in some areas, including like Hurricane, where they allow for sewer to be connected in case you're going to have like a sink or a bathroom on that garage. And I was just curious, like right now the definition just states it shall not be served by water or sewer services. And I just want to make sure, I think it makes sense because we want to make sure they don't become dwelling units, but I wonder if there's a way we can clarify or specify, because I think there's a benefit to having a sink or something in some of these shops. And that pretty much just completely cuts it out.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because you don't... Yeah, there's a fine line between when are they going to use that for a resident.
Sink and sewer, and maybe they might not. But there's really nothing to keep them from turning that shop into a...
Yeah, it creates that problem, but I think at the same time, when you say shall not, it's very restrictive if they would like to have that ability to have a sink.
I'll tell you, I don't know why my slideshow isn't matching up with the packet, but I love it for some reason.
Page 2, the very bottom.
Then the top of page 3 is where it has the shell mark. I don't know how to fix it though, Derek. That's going to be it.
Is that how they run it afterwards?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do to keep people from breaking the code, but.
Yeah.
At least we have something to fall back.
Our job is to make the code say what we want it to.
So he basically wants to come back to something that, because I mean, you've seen the accessory buildings where if you're working out there, you got to clean the sink and maybe a bathroom so you don't have to run back into the house.
Well, I just think like a greenhouse, you know, most of those people are going to have water to it, but a shower lot limits that they're not supposed to have water going to that. I'm not sure how to word it to make it make sense of it, but I do feel like we might want to clarify that.
Seems like a greenhouse could run a hose or a pipe, but it wouldn't have sewer.
Yeah.
It wouldn't allow them to have a sink.
Correct. I think the way it states it shall not be served by water or sewer kind of restricts it that you can't have either.
But a lot of shops, you know, you just need to clean up. You don't want to run into the house and make a mess in there. And, doing anything from working on vehicles or woodworking or anything else is really hard to have a sink.
And that's a very specific example, but I do feel like there's a lot of people that want those accessory buildings.
Let's take out shop if you serve.
Or you're talking about separate. Right.
Right.
A way to just say that it isn't separated as
an accessory building, but not a dwelling.
Well, meaning that it wouldn't have separate billing utility service.
It wouldn't have a separate connection.
Meaning just like an accessory dwelling unit, you don't have a separate electric meter. Water
I think they had that in here already, didn't they?
We were requiring them to have their own, pay their own impact fees and have their own sewer pay a sewer impact fee.
But we're talking about accessory buildings, right?
Yeah, this is like a shed, a greenhouse. It's not a, it's not like an ADU or.
But Kyson brings up a good point that what do you do if you need a sink out there?
Well, why don't we just take out, shall not be served by sewer services and leave water out of it?
Where's your sink going to drain?
Where's your sink going to drain?
Or if they have to get a bathroom. I know a couple people, even family members in Hurricane, that they have a sink in their bathroom that's in their shop, so they don't have to run it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, again, I think the reason it was pulled out was so that we didn't have that mix or that possibility of someone residing there. But I think... Yeah,
you know, because the old building code, like if you have a basement, the old building code will let you put a wet bar or a kitchen or anything like that that would make it have the ability to be a second
dwelling.
They try to protect against that. Now you can do whatever you want to do. But I see, so I'll come back with something. There are just going to have to be maybe some exceptions. So I'll come back with something on that.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So the bottom of page 3 defines what a detached accessory dwelling unit is. Establishes setbacks like the main dwelling will have, may be used by members of the family or non-paying guests or rented for 30 days consecutive or longer. So it specifically excludes those from being vacation rentals.
The next portion of that sentence, unless I'm understanding it correct, says and may be used for short-term rental purposes.
This is maybe. We've never approved that, have we?
Yeah.
We've talked about it a lot, but we've never approved that, have we?
No, not approved. This is all discussionary.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the one that Darren and Mike have been trying to push. I think we've had conversations where nobody was interested in going down this path. So it's been brought back. We're going to go down the path, whether you guys... We'll talk about it, and whether you agree to it or not, so they're going to go back to city council. So the changes we made into it is that short-term rentals are allowed to join it as our best, which are going to be basically vacation rentals. Darren now, I'm talking with me, wants to propose potentially two vacation rentals on larger pieces of property. And I'm going to hold off as long as we can. But this one right here, they want to see moving forward quite rapidly. This is actually one of the three we talked about, you know, the workforce living, the mixed use, and this part of the work meeting that we had in there. So basically that's all I did is I just added short-term rentals of 29 days or less to the
Derek, does it open the door to Pandora's box?
Oh yeah, I think it opens the door, same door that we just tried to close when we got the whole entire city down.
When I first heard it, that's exactly what I thought, that it's a workaround that ends up in the town, just a rental town.
Well, their fights can be, not their fights, the thing that they'll say is that the ADUs, you have to live there as the homeowner, either the primary or secondary dwelling, so you're better policing what's going on, which is better than what we have when we have the vacation rentals where most of those are being bought by people outside the state and they have no intent to even live here. They're just buying corporations and buying them random. So there's some...
Every vacation rental, every ADU that becomes a vacation rental takes workforce housing away, increases property values, increases property taxes, and makes our city less affordable for people to live here. In my humble opinion.
Well, that's the first thing you think of is that if the ADU was designed to help lead housing, and suddenly now they're renting units again to make profit.
Well, it was designed, you know, twofold, is for this, not necessarily, but the seniors don't get that big cost of living raise due to them being solely on Social Security, needed a way to bridge the gap, right? The shortfalls and stuff. So we thought this was a good way to do that, right? They can have a potential income of long term, somebody living there long term, paying rent. Or if you have to have a family member move back, because whatever the situation is, there's another place that they can be separate and potentially help financially bridge the gap. You know, so it was really made to help the individual there, which I don't know if they're looking at this as another avenue, but it was more so. All I know is that we didn't want to go down this road. When I say we talked about not going down this road. So we're going to have to face it one way or the other, make a recommendation whether you're for or against. And
I think once you start doing those things, you're going to start affecting what people can do with their property, just as a base question. And once you open that door, we've just terminated, 55 people that had short-term rentals. And they're going to say, well, what's the difference between somebody living there and not living there? It's the use of my property for a purpose I want to use it for. And this is the slippery slope that's been going on here for a long time. And I think if you're going to allow one, you're going to have to allow the other, ultimately.
But I do think you're right. If city council is asking for it, we'll have to go and put our best foot forward and come up with something that we would be okay with if it was approved. Because whether or not we recommend it for approval or not, city council does have that ability. So I think it's worth looking at and making sure we have something that if it does get pushed through, even if we recommend it, that they don't go with it, we have something we're still comfortable with. Because that is...
They're the elected officials, but I would be for holding our breath till we turn purple and stomping our feet and making them do it against our recommendations if they choose to do it.
Well, we've had two come in, and so now with two making the request, you know, we're going to have to proceed forward. And I just threw it in here because it was one that we were working on, but we can take it out and make it separate. But like Tyson said, look at what's there, and if you can figure anything else to add and help with it, it's going to go forward for them to decide if it's going to be a thing or not without, with regards to what we decide here. So.
Part of the advantages would be not, I mean, letting it benefit more the citizens of Laverne instead of the outer life before, where a lot of them were controlled by.
Yeah, but I don't know if it necessarily lowers your cost of housing. Sure, they can come and have a smaller place to live in, but they can't leave there if they're a young couple because they can't afford them to move out. So it doesn't. In one aspect, I think it lowers the cost of housing. In another aspect, I think it increases it.
Well, then it kind of starts to skirt like subdivisions, you know. Well, if I can have two, maybe I can have three or four. You know, depending upon the size of property, I don't have to go through subdivisions. I could just create a rental unit, maybe a bunch of rental units. Why not?
If I might just
please
put two bits in.
Just two.
I do know a person in Laverne who currently does not have a couple of her units being rented. They are rented long term rather than Airbnb because they have built the house. Anyway, she has commented to me that part of their building their home, they built in the cost that they would hope to be able to rent those as helping their income. That Airbnb type of places do help that individual in here in Laverne to be able to afford live here in Laverne. So there's kind of two sides to it too. She lives on it. The other properties are being long-term right now because she cannot Airbnb it being an accessory dwelling. Yeah. But she would like to be able to because that would increase her income for paying her mortgage. So there is another side to it, not just...
Airbnb, bed and breakfast requires a meal served.
Right. Well, there's Airbnb that is...
Yeah, yeah.
The company that everybody goes Airbnb in a home is a different, you look through it, but it's different requirements. So she is talking about doing, short-term rental in those units. That clarifies that.
They are beneficial to the people who have them.
Yeah. So we don't.
It feels to me like they're not beneficial to their neighbors, though.
I
could be completely wrong.
And I do think it's probably individually based on that Airbnb, how it is treated, taken care of, rented, who manages it. So I think there's... Because I agree, I know yours is a little bit different than mine. So that's to look at.
I just worry that if everyone starts building them and all of a sudden, I mean, already Airbnbs are getting pinched, locally. So you're more out there all of a sudden, they're not making the income, and yet they've had to put in another $300,000 or more into buildings accessory dwelling units that only added to their monthly payments, and yet they're not being able to recoup anything because there's so many Airbnbs out there.
And there is the supply and demand, so it's kind of a lot of risk for them too.
I was going to say, there's very much risk and reward. And that's a decision that the homeowner will have to make, but I think we're going to have to face it either way, it sounds like.
So if you can take the next little bit before, you know, when we meet in December, if there's other things you can see that can add to this, other than what I just changed the allowance for offer short-term rentals, we can always make that change. This one and the internal, which is coming up, it's a beast all by itself. In this definition, so you realize you can have internal, you can rent out a room, you can rent out a basement, you can rent out the top story as long as it's within the main frame of the main structure. You can meet health and safety, you can internally, the state has regulated that. We have no say in it other than certain criteria that we can put into it. And a lot of homes now are being built with that in mind. I think, you know, Interstate Rocks done great. I think down there when they've had, they've added and attached like a mother in law's place to it. I mean, it meets the criteria of the internal dwelling unit because it's part of the actual structure. The only thing is that I think we've made some changes we want to clarify as far as, you know, should it have a doorway going into the actual house itself, you know, where some may have a doorway, a separate doorway. And only doorway to the exterior part of the house, you know. So if we're really fighting a two-headed monster between both of those and changing the dynamics of the residential area, you know, because like down where, you know, where I live in Hurricane, it's just like every house has multiple families living in it. I mean, I got a daughter living with me right now, and you know, you bring her two cars with my 100 cars because of my 7 daughters, and you know, you start, the streets are just lined. You know, you change the really dynamics of the residential. But anyway, just anything else you can think to add to it, we're going to have to face it. We're going to have to do something. So
that would be you contacting Derek before our next meeting with recommendations. Okay. Do you want to talk for just a minute about the picture on page 5?
Yeah. This is over in Tyson subdivision.
I had a big question mark on this. So,
I won't say who the guy is, but if you notice, I actually have it up here right now.
Yep.
So let me. So you can see where his house is. If you look right up front, right up here is the cul-de-sac. So this is his primary house right here. This part right over here, can you see my mouse on your screen?
Uh-huh.
I cannot see. I don't have a pointer. Let me walk up there. I'm as big as the screen, so I hope I don't fall off yet. So this is the primary house right here, right? This right here is what he wants to make as an ADU. And he's trying to make it so that it's connected by walls, roof lines, and everything to the main house. And then he has racquetball, or not racquetball anymore, he calls it pickleball, swimming pool, and I can't remember what this is right here. So basically, he has an extremely large deed lot, which is not very normal in a subdivision, but you're going to have a few lots just because of the way things lay out, they're going to have this. So our concern is he wants to do MMA training. So first of all, does that fit the home occupation? Questionable, right?
What training?
MMA, mixed martial arts.
Oh, okay.
And bring, you know, two or three guys in for so long, and they would live here when he trained them, you know, his training facility. This would be like the workout area and stuff. So we, the reason I put this here is I'm thinking the only thing that we really have that's any anything opposing this is you can only use up 8% of your property for accessory buildings. So that really, if you take this kind of situation here, really is, doesn't really apply. You're still going to have a lot of buildings, a lot of things on a singular piece of property. I mean, people can do what they want, right? It's their property. But to the point that you've taken the whole entire property up and you're introducing kind of a different type of thing that's not normal in a residential area. So we're proposing percentage allowances within properties so that this particular concept wouldn't work. That is where we're trying to go with this. So the 8% just doesn't really get us where we want to go. We're still leaving it there, but you'll see that there are percentages in there that would help regulate that. And then this is also why we wanted to make the, he wanted this to be part of the internal, not the external. That's why all the connections, that's why we brought in, you know, here's what an attachment definition is and stuff. So I think this kind of takes us outside the borders of what a residential area is supposed to be.
How deep is the lot?
What do you think, 100?
Probably close. Yeah, 150 to 175.
Yeah. I was only curious, I discussed with you before, fire safety issues. If it was a detached dwelling, wouldn't you have to have some means of egress for you know, fire apparatus, that kind of stuff?
The only thing the fire department would probably make him do, depending on accessibility, would maybe put a fire sprinkler in. And that would really be it, other than...
And most of the time, you just have to be within 250 feet of a hydrant,
yeah.
Which is really... as the crow flies.
Which could be, you know, something he may have to put something different in his yard for that, but really as far as them being able to get vehicles and stuff back here, there's really nothing. Mm-hmm. No allowance, no need, you know, and they'll regulate, Perkin regulates that, but, you know, it's like down at the hot spring. The only way you're getting in is to go down 100 West, right?
And well, what does he have to have for parking spaces? Does he have to have two parking spaces?
He's got right now for each ADU or internal dwelling, it would be one parking spot. He would have to have, and he may have a lot of that already up front where it's already concrete.
He's got a huge driveway.
You know, so he's just kind of falling into a loophole, into a thing. Not saying this was what we'd face across the board. This is an abnormal thing we're facing. But we're just making some suggestions in your paperwork to look at.
Thank you.
Page 6 is R18, proposed change, 5 feet of setbacks, side yard setbacks, 5 feet if no utility exists, or 7.5 feet if there's a utility. Rear yard's the same. Accessory building shall be a maximum of 1 story in height. And F, lot coverage. Lot area coverage by single-story building structures or accessory buildings shall not exceed 40% of the total lot area. Lots with two-story buildings or structures shall not exceed 35% of the total lot area. Accessory structure lot coverage shall be included in the maximum lot coverage. So that would prevent this. That also means that on an 8,000 square foot lot, you can't have more than a 3,600 square foot house. That would exceed that 40%. So on some of these smaller lots, the Eve's little cul-de-sac I'm sure those exceed 40%. They fill most of the lot. So we would be excluding large houses. This is R18. We have R16 too, and those houses would even have to be smaller.
I wouldn't include it, and I don't know if I have, but I've not been brought up. I don't think I'd include it in R16, R36.
Okay, I thought it was. We'll get there in a minute.
I could have added it. You make up about very valid points. So, you know, and we could also say no properties of 10,000 square feet or bigger. You know what I mean? So that's not impacting the smaller lots. 10,000 seems to be our point of everything that we do, is 10,000 square feet and above. So just let me take you to the back. So the reason that we're, the setback right now, if you're 10 feet behind your house, if you're 10 feet from the back or side of your house, you can build a building, an accessory building within 2 feet of the property line. So the problem comes twofold. First, it breaks the fire code because there's still to be 5 feet separation between the property line and a building. Drainage is another issue because most people, that's supposed to go right up to the edge of the roof line. And a lot of people put the building up, and then the roof line extends that over, and then it dumps drainage onto everybody else's place. And third of all is that by allowing those, like in the little part of town, all of our irrigation runs through there, right? So we're letting it build within 2 feet of the corner, right on top of our irrigation line, or other utilities. You know, you've got phone, you have power, and things that could be in the backyard. So what we're saying is if we know the utility that you have to sit 7.5 feet off of the property line, because that's what is required by setbacks normally through the code. If you don't have that, then we're allowing them to move up to 5 feet. Now we're compliant with fire code. And it makes drainage a lot easier, and makes it so they keep everything in their own yard. Because as more and more people are moving in from larger cities, this is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. You know, and we had a fire over on 220 North. You got to build a shed within 2 feet, and the other guy on this side does it 2 feet. Last winter, he caught on fire, and it caught the other guy on fire. So, you know, just a thing I think that we need to address. We're not trying to make people not be able to have full access to their property, but there's got to be some safety. You know, if you build a shed, let's say you build an ADU or something in the backyard, we have a utility run through that. We can go in there and tear your building down, and you have to put it back to your building on top of our utility. Well, that doesn't make much sense. The city approved you building there. You built there, now we're going to tear it down because our irrigation line is there. So that's kind of the forethought on that. But the property size, I think you know that we might want to look at putting it at 10,000 square feet and above, not to impact. But most of the kids nowadays don't really want any yard anyway. They're just going to build setback to setback, right?
Well, majority of the smaller ones, they're going to have, most of them do like an internal unit, like a mother-in-law suite, instead of doing an accessory unit.
Because of the housing crisis, some of the cities in the state, I don't know if any of you were at the seminar that I went to up at the League of Cities and Towns, Ephraim is doing a thing where there's an alleyway behind that they park in, and they're really close together. That they've abandoned setbacks and requirements, and there's no lawn. Were you there? It seems like they were 1,300 square feet that would go up to 1,700 square feet houses on like a 2,300 square foot lot. So we're not necessarily bound by the way we've always done things, but this makes sense to me. I'm okay with us not having an Ephraim complex. Questions about that? Page 7, R110. A says private garages and other accessory buildings located at least 10 feet behind the main building. I didn't know if that was 10 feet behind the front of the main building or 10 feet behind the back of the main building.
It can be 10 feet to the side or 10 feet to the back, as long as they have 10 feet.
So they can be 10 feet behind the front of the main building, so they're kind of beside it.
They can be directly to the side as long as they're 10 feet.
Yeah, you have to, like your frontage, top frontage is 25 feet. You can't restrict, you can't put any buildings in the 25 foot setback. But once you step back from the 25 and you can clear 10 feet and meet all the site requirement, you can do a building.
Okay, 10 feet behind the front of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wasn't.
It can be parallel with the front as long as you're 10 feet to the side still.
Okay.
Well, we're even looking, and this might not be the time, but we're even looking at, because nobody uses the front yard much, like for kids to play. A lot of times they want everybody in the back where it's a little safer and kids can be crowded a little bit more so they don't have traffic. There has been contemplation of moving the house from 25 to 20 or 15, but keeping the garage 25 because of parking, so you can still have the tandem parking ability without pushing into the sidewalk, limiting the front more so than providing a bigger back. So there's a big shift for me in that right now, not that we have to go down the road. That's been something that we've looked at.
And R110, if you have 16,000 square feet, you can have two buildings on it, two residences.
But they have to be attached.
Okay.
They can't be separate.
C says that each of those two have to have a 45-foot frontage with the street. What about these cul-de-sacs?
The cul-de-sacs are allowed, so their stipulation is, because you know they're narrow, or mm-hmm. they're around the cul-de-sac, as long as they can meet the 25-foot setback within 25 feet, they're fine.
Okay.
That's in a whole different part of the code, in the zoning code. And here is the problem. You got to go through and just find all the areas where we want to try to bring everything together. So you can miss a lot of stuff. You know, yeah, there's no doubt about it, but it's still spread out through our code that it makes it hard.
E says accessory buildings. No accessory building or group of accessory buildings shall cover more than 8% of the total lot area, which is kind of what we were talking about. Questions there?
I think this is where we start with the
R110.
With this 10,000 square feet, not necessarily R110, because you've got bigger properties, right? I just think it might just be properties that are 10,000 square feet. 10,000 square feet or larger would have to provide by this, because that would drop out. There's going to be some in the R1A that are going to be 10,000 square feet. Because they're oddball lots. I think this guy is in an R18, but yeah, his lot's huge. It's just all how the layout with all the topography and things that they have to work with at this game in the new lot.
So on this one, it'd give you about, if you have a single story, it'd give you about 4,000 square feet to work with. Well, that's
which is a pretty good size mm-hmm. house.
Huge. And a two story would give you about 3,500. So, that's just total between the accessory building and townhouse.
So maybe it usually won't matter because smaller lots are usually going to want to have a smaller house. So maybe it doesn't matter, but it will limit, like Eve's cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
That wouldn't.
I don't think we could put it for now. I think 10,000 is good coming up, and we'll just. Instead of doing the way we did here through the rest of these, I think what we need to do is just put a provision that if the lot is 10,000 square feet, then I think the 8% probably works for the smaller lots, right? 8,000 square feet, yeah. And with these provisions, then you wouldn't have to hardly do anything with your yard.
So if you're going to put a provision that says anything, any lot above the 10,000, you probably need to include that in your zone in your R18 zone still, because some lots may be larger.
Yeah, I think
that way it's the same. Anything larger.
Yeah, I think it goes in all the zones. Yeah. I think even the sixes.
I think you have to, just because you never know.
Yeah.
A lot of people use a really big lot that can't be used anywhere else to get your averages.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the detached, the ADUs also, you might want to look at the parking and just make sure all that scores, because right now the DADUs have two 8x19 spots, and I don't think they can be right off the street either, so I think there's some language in there about their location.
Yeah, it has to be off-street parking. It's got to be concrete or asphalt. This can't be pulled up on your lawn encampment.
So it's going to affect where they're being located, you know.
Yeah. See, all the things that we thought we maybe had remedied, but apparently we weren't even close. So, I appreciate that.
Okay, questions there? Takes us to page 9, R36. Number D talks about usable open space. I don't know what that means.
What
page?
Page
10. It's on page 10 where that where you're adjusted. Well,
page 10 is your proposed changes, but yeah.
Yeah.
This is
our number D says usable open space, a minimum of 1,000 square feet per dwelling unit of usable open space to be used common with all units in a development shall be provided for multifamily developments. What is usable open
parks,
space?
Playground areas, barbecue.
So you're thinking maybe a definition on usable open space?
Maybe everybody but me knows what that means.
No, I think it's a great clarifying definition we could add. Because I think there's going to be a lot of developers that will try to twist what usable open space is.
Mm-hmm. Developers? What's wrong with these people?
I'm just saying.
We can add that to the, definitely add it to the definition, but that's usually how we've interpreted it. Like, do you remember down there in Spanish Gardens, that 7-plex that got put down in there? I think, any of you guys go down there with me? You and I. So he turned his open space into grass and a playground that he put for the kids. That counted as open space. So, but yeah, let's do that.
It was down there a couple weeks ago. It looks pretty nice still, too.
Yeah, it's only been a couple of years. Okay, I'll work on the definition.
Okay. And E, this gives them structures or accessory buildings shall not exceed 50% of the total area, which makes sense to me because it's a bigger lot. Other questions, comments there? Page 11, RA1, the same setback requirements.
Sorry, I'm just curious, on a multifamily, so just jumping back to page 10, on a multifamily residential, I'm just trying to figure out what would be a good example of what would be used as an accessory building. Because they're saying it can't be more than 8% of the total lot area, but I was just trying to figure out what would be an accessory building that could be for multifamily.
Well, so like in your R36, which this is an R36, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
So basically, you're going to have your unit on 4,000 square feet of property, right? And you're going to have like a really teeny, probably a 10 by 40.
So like no little tough sheds or anything like that?
I'm thinking that like a tough shed would be your biggest thing.
Okay.
So I think maybe that word just doesn't work. Maybe we just take that whole thing out and just put in there, you know, you're allowed to have a tough shed of a certain size. You know, like anything over 200 square feet's got to have a building permit. It used to be 120. Maybe we use something that would fit within that small area, because I look back at the Spanish Gardens, those lots are really, I mean, I don't even know how you get any more than your HVAC in most of those backyards. You know, we don't want people to have to start the operation of buildings. So maybe this 35%, 40% doesn't work at all in R36. So I don't know if you're going to have that property. I don't see any of that property being 10,000 square feet. Maybe that's not even applicable. Maybe we just define that you can have a small shed structure or something in that property's property.
Yeah, I think we, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like we might need to rethink that a little bit just because.
Unless the developer had one with individual units, a storage area.
So yeah, like a storage unit for those.
Storage area, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to word that, but.
I'm going to tend to limbs. I think we just strike that out and we'll come up with a different way of putting in some type of small. You know, everybody wants a place to put a shelter or something, right?
Chicken coop.
Utility shed.
Chicken.
Thank you. So we're on R1A.
R1.
Yeah. It's been wrong in my head for 20 years. top of page 12. The single-story buildings along with accessory buildings shall not exceed 40% again. And then 8% for accessory buildings again. Questions? That's kind of the same thing we've been doing. R114 on page 13 is the same. Setbacks and lot coverage size.
You always want your zones to kind of mimic each other. You know, there's always going to be more and some, less and some, but if they still come with the same setbacks and the same percentages, it's easier to do it that way. So that's kind of why we kind of basically cut the coffee all the way through here.
Page 14, we're getting really close. Page 14.
Item 54.
Most of it is going to go fast.
Yeah.
Mobile home zone number A says the development plan will be reviewed by the building review board. Who is that?
It's a board that probably ready it, so it's a board that I've never had to meet, but there are people that are actually called, like you've got a construction worker, you've got an engineer, you've got different people in different areas of life or professions that make up this board.
Okay.
I don't know if people that we put together are still alive or even still here. But oh, Debbie's here. So sorry. Sorry, I apologize for that. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have any questions about that either. I think we're pretty limited to where one of those could go in our zone.
Yeah, I mean, you've got just the one area. I guess you actually have two, right?
I can't remember. Sold, it's pretty limited.
I think they're both those. I think they're the only ones we have that are allowed.
I noticed that about half of Stoll's is zoned commercial, too. The front.
Yeah, years ago when we went back through, so, I mean, they are allowed that use regardless of grandfather dense, so it'd be non-conforming. But if at the point in time that those go down and nobody wants to do anything, we want that to be a part of our commercial area. So it's just, they can continue to do what they're doing at this point until they want to try to do something different. So that's what we'll have to do is live by that standard.
Okay.
You're technically done.
Yeah. Page 15 adds two requirements to that mobile home zone. Area coverage by coach and covered outdoor areas shall not exceed 75% of the lot or rentable area. Accessory structure lot coverage shall be included in the maximum lot coverage limitation. And accessory buildings, no accessory building or group of accessory buildings shall cover more than 8% of the total or lot or rental area. Questions about that? Okay. Page 17 through page 54, the city's wanting to move this from the zone into the construction standards. It's water design system, street and sidewalk construction, and excavations. I'd be okay if we deal with that all without going through it. So those pages are all lined through, and the city would like it just to move them from here to their construction standards.
Definitely vote for that one.
Yeah,
that, I don't know where that, so that, when we did the last time we did, the last construction, one part, I'm sorry, was 2002. We redid them in 2020. Did not see that they were in both places until we're updating right now. In the middle of that, and I thought, well, that's not very smart because you're constantly changing construction standards, but you're hardly ever going back into the ordinance and changing and updating those things. Which we found out as we were going through and I was comparing side to side, there was a lot of things that were outdated. So it's better because I think the construction standards are done by, aren't they done by resolution? I think they're done by resolution. I don't know. Can't remember how they're adopted. I think it's resolution though. They're easier to change and to modify than the ordinance. And I thought first it's going to make our vote smaller. And we just need one place to go and it make more sense to do the construction standard. So what we do is we went through it as a staff, made all the changes. We're having our engineers just go through and verify that everything we did is up to date. Like our sidewalks are 4 feet now. Our sidewalks are going to go 5 feet, so we can meet ADA, right? Like, I don't know if you know, it's down 100 west, south. They're 4 foot, and there's every, about 500 feet, I think there's a kind of a wider area sidewalk, so a wheelchair can turn and come back onto the street. At 5 foot, we wouldn't have been required to have that. So we're changing to become more ADA compliant, and all these changes to make more sense to me, the construction standards, and even for developers to be able to go through. We'll keep the bonding and the different types of bonding and surety bonding and all that stuff. That will stay in the code, but we did leave them in here just to reference the code. So that kind of stuff has to go through the city council.
There were a couple of sections that were not on this road, is that intentional?
I missed them. Okay. Yeah. Somebody brought that up, so in my version, new version, they're all crossed out. But yeah. So that's just kind of what we're doing. And I hope this is, I know it's a lot, and I don't know how else to do it, other than this makes more sense on some of the smaller stuff we can compile all together and get it out, get it done. So you guys have brought us a lot of things we didn't anticipate, so I appreciate that. And I'll make some changes, and if you guys have more you want to change, call me or email me or call Nancy. She usually tracks me down wherever I'm at. And I'll try to make all the changes for the next meeting, and we'll do the same thing. But I'm going to take out those other scratched out pages, and the ones that we're going to take out of the book, and I'll just refer to them in one sheet. So.
Perfect.
Thank you. Anything further? Okay. That would bring us to item number E.
I move the way to turn.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And no sex meeting.
Okay.